You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast out of Wesley Seminary at Iwu. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Assistant Professor of Pastoral Care.
People were created to live interdependently. We're built for relationships. Our life is what we share with each other. In the beginning, we are taken care of. Then we can care for others. Then there comes a day when we will be taken care of again. Those are the words of one of those interviewed by today's guest, Dr. Roland Martinson, recorded in his book, Elders Rising, The Promise and Peril of Aging. Dr. Martinson, Raleigh, as he's invited us to address him, is Emeritus Vice President and Dean at Luther Seminary, where he was Carrie Bailson Professor of Children, Youth, and Family Ministry. He's been a lifelong supporter of youth ministry and a speaker on many church topics. His previous works include The Spirit and Culture of Youth Ministry and Coming of Age. The book we are discussing today is Elders Rising, The Promise and Peril of Aging by Fortress Press. In this podcast, you're going to hear about the extension of both quality and quantity of life for elders. You're going to hear about the potential of elders to give leadership and presence by accompanying others both in their faith community and in their lives. And you're going to hear some practical ways about how the church can both minister to and receive ministry from those who are in their aging years. So, Raleigh, you break elderhood into three distinct phases: early, middle, and late. Could you describe these phases for us to help us understand what you mean by elders and elderhood?
Certainly. In the research I did in the science of aging, gerontological research, geriatric research, I discovered several articles, a great deal of data around the increased quantity of the years of older adulthood, as well as increased quality of the years of those of their lives. I also interviewed 53 people between the ages of 62 and 97 in six regions of the country, and discovered as I listened to their stories and factor analyzed them that these areas of the extended period of elderhood tended to have common characteristics. And they roughly broke out into 65 to 75 or so, 75 to 85, and 85 and above. And while there are some common characteristics in each of those, everyone ultimately ages on their own particular pathway. But there are, in fact, clear indicators of what goes on in this long period of life, 25 to 30 years oftentimes, and discrete areas or elements of it. One of the first discoveries I made was that in the science, if a person lives to be 65, there's an 87% chance that they will live to be 85. So elderhood, or this older adulthood stage, is for the vast majority of people at least 20 years long and longer. So what are those characteristics that are common to early, mid, and late elderhood? One of the people I interviewed said it's go-go, slow-go, and no-go, with a twinkle in her eye. That's a kind of an interesting way to look at. Early elderhood is usually marked by some transition from widespread or defined public life to what we often call retirement, or a less public life and not so much full-time but more part-time. So that transition into retirement is especially dramatic and sometimes traumatic for men. So there's that shift taking place. Early elderhood is marked by pretty much an extension of what goes on in later adulthood. Lots of activity. There's significant amount of volunteering. There's a lot of travel. There's a lot of interaction with family. So it's a very active lifestyle. Whereas as one moves to that later years of early adulthood early elderhood into middle elderhood, there's a transition into a less active lifestyle, Still some volunteering, but less active volunteering. Almost every person that I interviewed, I think everyone I interviewed, had at least one chronic illness who was between the ages of 75 and 85. What's interesting is while those chronic illnesses were there, the vast majority of the people I interviewed had adapted and addressed the chronic illness, and it was not keeping them from being able to live a relatively whole and healthy lifestyle. In the middle elderhood years, there was increased loss of physical capacities, some mental capacities, and particularly loss of close friends and family members, so that relationships were shifting dramatically. Quickly to turn to late elderhood, this stage of life was marked mostly by just simply taking on and picking up the basic tasks of life, of getting dressed, making one's meals, taking care of one's hygiene, getting basic grocery shopping done with other people's help, and so forth. So in each of these 10-year periods of time, there were distinct characteristics that marked them. And as they moved from early, mid to late, just the process of aging, senescence, that process itself tended to be more marked and create greater limits along the way. Well, that gives you just a bit of an introduction to the whole of elderhood as a life stage and a bit of the phases.
Well, I really appreciated you being able to parse out some of the different elements. I often tell my students that simplicity on this side of complexity is worth nothing. Simplicity on the far side of complexity is worth everything. Of course, that's not original to me. It's something that's been passed around. And your ability to take what we often oversimplify, right, the sense of being an aged person or elderhood, and then to break it up to see the different complexities of it, I find really, really helpful. And seeing its complexity leads into the next question, but I don't want to just give it as a simplistic answer. Okay, so the question I've got is this: you write that we need role models for aging. Now you might say, well, we need role models because aging is complex and there's lots of different aspects to it, and surely that's part of it. But why do you say that we need role models for aging?
Put simply, I think, because of the age wave that we're now navigating, that is the extension of this stage of life, the expansion, that is the numbers of people, with the boomers now aging every day in America, 10,000 more people turn 65, 3,500 pass, so that there are 6,500 more people over the age of 65 every day. As this part of the life cycle, these 25 or more years unfold, the changes that are taking place because of the numbers, because of better nutrition, because of replacement parts, because of better medicines, mean that to be 65 in 2018 is not the same as it was to be 65 in 2000 or 1980 or 1990. So the changes are so rapid that we need people who are navigating them and navigating them positively and well to help us to see what the possibilities are, rather than to live according to the stereotypes that oftentimes come from just some people in the media looking at elderly as frail, or on the other side of things, setting forth some esoteric example of a person who is hardly aging at all at age 80 or 85. So the complexity of all the changes, the possibilities of elderhood are best worked out when we have around us people who are actually living them and handling the challenges, meeting the perils well.
I study leadership, and one of the things that is so important to be able to engage in leadership is a proper sense of imagination, right? An ability to conceive what a good future might look like. And one of the ways that we are able to conceive a good future is by having role models or patterns and be able to see those. And so I like the way that you've said there's this challenge of having moving into these different phases of aging is becoming more and more prevalent. More and more people are going to experience them. And as a result, if we have more role models, then we'll have more people who are able to teach those coming behind them how to do this well. I think about my own life, and I think I've been one who is really, really blessed to have a number of people who knew how to age and knew how to age well, and how to enjoy and navigate different phases of life, whichever ones they found themselves in. And it's really a blessing to me. And so I appreciate how you've done this research and you've stretched your own imagination and acted out of your own sense of calling and vision to do this research and put it together and publish it for us. It's a tremendous gift for us. I say all of that because one of the chapters in the book, you talk about accompanying. All right. You discuss the value that elders can bring by accompanying. I can think even of going through this book as a kind of being accompanied by Raleigh Martinson, you know, as we're reading it and hearing your voice come through it. But I'd love for you to tell our listeners, what does accompanying mean and why do you see it as so valuable for elders to perform this action?
Let me frame accompanying first with a bigger picture. As I elicited the stories of the latest period of the of their lives from these 53 elders that I interviewed, I factor analyzed their stories, and I discovered that there were six strengths that emerged from those 53 stories that are particularly germane and unique to elderhood. One of those six was presence. That is the time and intention to be there with oneself so one can be truly oneself, but also to be there with those whom one knows and loves. One has the time to do that. One doesn't have other things distracting one necessarily. One can be focused. One can be there. One can look into the face of the other as though they're actually there and listen to the heartbeat as well as the ideas. So I discovered that as I listened to these stories, that accompaniment was many things. On the one hand, it was staying in contact with family members, staying in contact with friends, and letting them know that one was thinking about them, praying for them, perhaps even once in a while calling them. Secondly, it oftentimes took the form of filling the gaps, particularly with close friends and particularly with family, where an elder would be available to step in and support if a child was ill, or if a friend needed someone to relieve a caregiver. The elder was there to step in, to be available, and to pick up and accompany. Another way in which accompanying took place was elders have reflected experience. And many times the coming up alongside of another person resulted in conversations about being, becoming, belonging, how to behave, ethics, believing. And the storytelling that elders were doing in the accompaniment oftentimes was exceedingly instructive and provided a spirited sense of hopefulness. So it's first of all, it's one of the strengths of elderhood. Second of all, it takes many varying dimensions as the elder steps into being truly present with the other.
One of the reasons that I think Christians value aged and aging persons is that they often courageously provide relationships in which those who follow after them may learn Christ-likeness, right? There's a unique human experience to being an elder, and out of that uniqueness, people provide a way for others to see how Christ might act in it, both as the older person and as the younger person. Do you think that elders provide a unique opportunity for their youngers to be spiritually transformed?
Indeed. Regularly, if you look at the stories in the book, you'll discover that in the story of the elder, there is an expression of gratitude, oftentimes a sense of thanks for having lived this long, the gift of other people in their lives, the gift of a Christian faith that's accompanied them a lifetime, the sense of the presence of Jesus alongside as their lives were unfolding. So there was this tap root into the goodness of God in creation, the goodness of God in Jesus Christ, the goodness of God as available as present spirit. And that genuine gratitude oftentimes expressed itself in an attitude, in a spirit, and in an angle of vision, a way of looking at life that enabled elders to speak about the present tense of God in everyday daily life in ways that were truly phenomenal and revelatory for the person who was listening. Oftentimes also the deep sense of gratitude elicited a sense of compassion and understanding and walking alongside of, living in the messiness, being alongside in the messiness, a kind of theology of the cross, of Jesus being there, whether one takes the wings of the morning and fly to moments of highest ecstasy or slip into the depths of deepest despair. So there was a kind of embodiment of the gospel that came through the relationship that these elders had with other elders, with family members of the next generation, with the generation oftentimes once removed, a kind of mentoring that was safe and lively because of the attitude, the graciousness of the elder, and the authenticity of the way in which they talked about their faith and expressed care and concern for the other.
Raleigh, I appreciate this ability to bring this out theologically and to discuss a theology of the cross, to discuss the role of leadership, the role of presence. One of the benefits of the book, Elders Rising, is that you do delve into the scripture to see the value of being an elder and the value of elders to their community. One of the things that comes to mind as a practical application with that is you discuss the importance of language. So you cite Laura Carstensen, a psychology professor who uses the term perennials. All right, this is, and she writes, the symbolism of calling people who are aged and aging perennials is perfect. It makes clear that we're still here, blossoming again and again. It suggests a new model of life in which people engage and take breaks, making new starts repeatedly. Perennials aren't guaranteed to blossom year after year, but given proper conditions, good soil, nutrients, they can go on for decades. It's aspirational. Now, you've used the biblical language of elder and using the word elderhood. But reflecting on the theology of aging and the potential for community in aging was so important because you cite how important that faith communities are to those who are aging, that elders often find identity and value in their faith communities. I'm going to list a few of the challenges that you note that people who are aging can face. And I'd love for you just to tackle some of the practical ways that churches might be able to be resources and helps to those in their congregation who are dealing with these. So these are some of the unique disruptions that, as you call them, unique disruptions to the lives of those who are aging. These include physical disability, isolation, cognitive impairment, and even financial resource inadequacy. With those in mind, what are some of the practical ways that a faith community can play a redemptive, a resourcing, a valuable role in the lives of those who are aging?
One of the really delightful discoveries in the research that I did with these 53 people 49 of whom were connected in some way with a faith community, with a Christian church, was the incredible power of an anchoring community with a God story, with a sense of the active presence and liveliness of God's activity among them and between them, and a faith story that was hopeful. In those stories, I became aware that ministry with elders might be transformed in our thinking from taking care of those people who are older, providing some kind of entertainment for them, making sure that they aren't forgotten as they rust out, to seeing elders as an incredible resource for the whole congregation, but particularly in creating centers for vital and resilient aging, so that the ministry with seniors in a congregation is a lovely, exciting, aspirational, proactive group of people. And some of the ways in which that then can take concrete form and shape, I'll share some of them that I see emerging now in congregations. A couple of congregations I'm coaching have set up from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon, a presence in the foyer, which they've turned into kind of a cafe of their congregation, where there's a kind of senior center, where there's food available. There are three elders who have been trained available to just pick up conversations, and in picking up those conversations, have a sense of where the resources are in the community, starting with the church and continuing out into the larger community. So they're kind of a presence and a resource center. In that process, what these congregations have discovered is that they need to put together a steering committee that can work on facilitating resource programming into the life of elders. So they bring in people who talk about financial planning. They bring in people who are helping them deal with end-of-life issues. They bring in people who are able to take a look at doing family reconciliation work. Whatever it is that is challenging for elderly people that can be looked at and facilitated then becomes a part of the ongoing learning process alongside a Bible study, et cetera, et cetera. In that process, some of the ways that I saw the community itself, the faith community itself, becoming exceedingly concrete and helpful had to do with loss and redevelopment of relationships. One of the 92-year-old men that I interviewed had been to 71 funerals and had at some point lost most of his closest friends, including his wife of 62 years.
Wow.
He looked at me with tears in his eyes and said, "I don't know what I would have done if I would not have the Christian community, people of faith around me who have accompanied me in these losses, but more importantly, have been there to strike up new friendships with me." He said, "I know now I'll never be isolated because I've got these people walking alongside of me." So accompaniment is one of them. One of the groups I'm working with have put together a resource group of experts, older people, they're early elders and mid elders, who are available to help with all kinds of differing things, taking care of housing, doing yard work, fixing things, working with financial matters and so forth. They have a kind of elders in action resource that they have available to work with people who have needs that come up. Finally, to say, it's almost always the case that if a person lives long enough, there's some short period of time or longer period of time of disability. And in some of the groups that I'm working with now, the congregation or the senior ministry is utilizing early elders and early mid elders to develop caregiving capacities for late elders or late, late elders, so they can stay longer in their homes, be accompanied by people who can do all kinds of things for them, broker resources into their lives. So in the last chapter of the book, I lay out elements that a group of seniors who are excited about the powers of elderhood can spark a new aspirational ministry that unleashes the capacities of elders, their presence, their purposefulness, their capacity in relationships, their compelling interests, their playfulness. All of this can be unleashed in the life of elders, not only in the community, in the faith community, but outside the community and the larger community as well.
Joining us today has been Dr. Rolly Martinson. Rolly is the author of Elders Rising. I want to finish with this quote, and it's the one that you start the book with. "This investigation of aging began with my own experience. At age 75, I sensed changes in body, mind, and spirit. My joints often ached. I was stiff and moved more slowly. My skin was thinner and sagged. I looked different. Sometimes things I had known since childhood weren't ready to mind. It took longer to read and digest the paper. Even though I moved more slowly, I had discretionary time to invest wherever and whenever. I had opportunities to do research or volunteer or play or just be. There were decisions to make about who to be and what to do." Rolly, I'm grateful that you chose to write Elders Rising and to ground it in such fascinating research and sharing with us the experience of all these people that you interviewed as a resource to the church. So I use that to say two things as we wrap up. Number one, if we've got people who are in their elder years, maybe 65 to 75, 75 to 85, or 85 plus, that there's such value that you have to contribute to the church, symbolically, of course, in Elders Rising, as you've given to us. And secondly, for those who are giving leadership in the church, not to neglect the potential for impacting ministry and valuable resources, both to receive and to offer from those who are elders in their church as well. Rolly, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
And listeners, thank you for tuning in as well. We hope that you've been sparked in some ways to research, ways to minister, and maybe ways to listen as well to those in your church and in your community. So thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.